it back. It wasn't an expression of welcome. It was that same blood-curdling shark's grin that the black suits all wore. He held it for as long as he could, then his cheeks started to spasm and his face fell. Seconds later, his mouth opened again, and he spoke a string of soft words that didn't make any sense. "Donovan?" I talked over him, loud enough to be heard from outside the compartment. "You remember your name, right? We're still getting out. We found a way. Think we have anyway. It won't be long, I promise." He was still ranting, specks of spit and blood flying from his lips as he hissed out the same sequence of words. I leaned in, close enough to feel the heat from his body against my face, and his choked cry suddenly made sense.
"Donovan is dead,"
he whispered, his metallic gaze sweeping the curtain trying to find something.
"Donovan is dead. Donovan is dead. Donovan is dead."
Over and over, louder and louder, I saw the side of the screen twitch, two faces appearing.
"What are you doing?" Simon asked. "We came to get equipment, not see him. You're going to get us all caught." "Donovan is dead. Donovan is dead. Donovan is dead."
I wanted to put a hand on his arm, try to calm him down, but he was too hot to touch. Simon walked up and started hauling me away toward the next cubicle.
"The Weezers are going to hear,"
he was saying, more to himself than to me. He was right, and fear made me follow without objection. It was only as I was slipping past the screen that Donovan's mantra stopped. I turned, saw that his face was locked on mine again, his soulless Cheshire cat smile engraved in my head long after it had disappeared behind the curtains. A wheeze fluttered up from close by, increasing in volume and pitch like a siren. My heart was pounding too hard. I couldn't make out which direction the sound was coming from. I realized I was gripping Simon with the same white-knuckled strength he was holding me with, Z already backing off the way we had come. The wheeze trailed off into another of those gargled purrs, a noise that could only be a cold chuckle. I heard the sound of curtains being pulled back, a cry like that of an injured bird.
"Where is it?"
I asked, my mouth practically up against Simon's ear. He shook his head, not daring to move in case the armful of equipment he held gave him away. It sounded as though the Weezer was between us and the main door, out in the aisle that separated the two rows of beds. Surely we'd be fine as long as we stayed out of sight. Another set of curtains pulled back, a tuneless whisper like a broken accordion.
"Go,"
muttered Simon, nodding back toward Donovan's cubicle. C went first, gently easing himself between the screen and the wall. I followed, and it was just as Simon emerged behind me that the shadow rose up on the screen. The three of us froze like this was a game of musical statues and the music had just stopped. But to my horror, Donovan started laughing, a cold, booming chuckle that could have come right from a black suit.
"You're ours now,"
he said through a grin. Then the curtain was ripped open and death lurched in.
The charnel house. The Weezer showed no hint of surprise, no sign of hesitation. It took one giant stride across the cubicle, and before I could even blink, its gloved hand was around my throat. I'd assumed the Weezers were weak and slow. I thought that's why they needed the black suits to carry away the prisoners they picked when they came up top on the Blood Watch. I assumed wrong. The hand that held me was like a vice, crushing my windpipe so hard that I couldn't even draw a breath. It pulled me toward it, and I could do nothing but stare at its mottled face, the rusting gas mask sewn into its leathery skin, two eyes as dull as coal, but somehow gleaming with sick pleasure. The edges of my vision were clouding, flecks of black lightning leaving dark scars and threatening to plunge me into unconsciousness. The Weezer threw back its head and called out, a twisted scream that tore my soul in two. There was movement to my side. C running forward and crying out defiantly. The Weezer's head twisted unnaturally and it extended its other arm. It was too late for Z to change direction and he flew right into it, the gloved hand locking around his neck and holding him there even though his legs were off the ground and shaking like a rag doll's. The monster cocked its head and looked at us as though it couldn't believe its luck. I couldn't see its mouth because of the contraption over it, but I knew it was smiling. It called out again, and something distant answered it. Then something else, a chorus of wet cries that flooded into the infirmary. We were dead. I knew it. I kicked out at the freak that held me, but its flesh felt like porridge beneath its jacket, and it didn't even seem to feel my blows. One of my kicks caused a pair of syringes around its chest to explode, and its expression changed. The eyes narrowing and its wheeze lowering in pitch, like it was warning me to stay still. It didn't have to. What little strength I had was long gone, totally drained. I tried to suck in some air, but the fingers clamped around my windpipe wouldn't let me. It screamed again, the noise fading into that mucus-filled growl of delight. My mind was snatching at the last few strands of consciousness, like someone sinking into quicksand, grasping for a fistful of weeds. I looked at Z, saw him staring back, his tear-stained face a perfect reflection of my own. Then the fleshy noose around my throat loosened and I fell to my knees. For a moment my lungs couldn't remember what to do, then they expanded, air flooding in and purging the darkness from my vision. I thought that maybe the Weezer had suffered one of its spasms, or had thrown me down in order to stick me with a poison hypodermic. But it was staggering back, the silver handle of a scalpel protruding from its shoulder like a military epaulette. C was on the floor next to me, sobbing and gasping for breath. I looked around, saw Simon standing close by, his face a rictus of shock and repulsion. The Weezer was stunned, but not badly injured. It unleashed another cry, one I'd never heard before, which echoed around the room like an arriving fleet of demons. It reached up and pulled out the scalpel, releasing a spurt of putrid, oil-coloured blood. Then it threw itself at us. Still on my knees, I did the only thing I could think of. I threw myself forward, bunched up into a ball, praying it wouldn't notice me. I felt its boot crunch into my side and thought it was kicking me until I sensed its body tripping over mine, crashing earthward. For a moment, I was lost in the folds of its coat, its graveyard stench enveloping me. Then it was on the floor, twisting and writhing like a beetle on its back. "Quick!" yelled Simon, throwing himself on the Weezer despite his obvious terror. He was still holding the equipment he'd stolen from the trolley, and with a cry he plunged another scalpel into its chest. It bucked, trying to stand, kicking the side of Donovan's metal sarcophagus loudly enough to be heard up top. I glanced at the doors on either side of the infirmary, knowing the black suits would be here in seconds. "Help me," Simon called again, sticking something else into the freak beneath him. I scrabbled around, looking for a weapon. The creature lashed out, catching Simon on the jaw and sending him reeling across the cubicle. Trying not to think about what I was doing, I slammed my body onto the Weezer's chest, pinning it. Z was by my side, throwing ineffective punches. One hit the creature's gas mask, and it howled in pain as two of the stitches split. "The mask!" I heaved, throwing a punch of my own. Pain shot up my arm as my fist connected with the metal apparatus, but four more of the ancient stitches snapped loose. The Weezer knew what we were doing, its body spasming and rocking with such force that I was almost thrown off. Simon reappeared, kneeling on the Weezer's arm, then placing his massive hand over the gas mask. Z bundled onto its other arm, holding it down with all his strength, and together we punched and pulled and ripped at the Weezer's face. The mask came loose with a sound that turned my stomach inside out. There was the snap of wire, loud enough to be a pistol shot, then the sickening tear of split flesh and the sucking noise of a pressurized seal coming loose, like the sound a sink plunger makes. The mask fell to the floor, and I immediately felt the strength vanish from the Weezer. We got off it, barely managing to stay upright as we huddled on the other side of the compartment. It was still thrashing, but made no attempt to stand. Its hands were held up to its face, desperately fumbling for the mask that was no longer there, its mouth flopping open, huge and toothless. It screamed, but all that came out was a hoarse croak. It tried to take one more breath, its eyes now wide with panic as they searched the cubicle for its attackers. But before they found us, it was dead. There was no time to think about what we'd done. We bolted sprinting past the screen into the infirmary and making for the door that led back to the cells. A savage bark stopped us in our tracks, a howl that I knew only too well. It was a dog, somewhere out in the corridor beyond, and by the sounds of the throbbing voices that yelled alongside it, the creature wasn't alone. "Black suits," Simon said, cursing, then doubling back, heading for the door on the other side of the room, the door that led even deeper into the prison's medical facility. "Come on, follow me." We did, trying not to look at the dead Weezer as we passed it. The cries were still flowing into the room, and I expected to see more of the gas masks lurching in at any moment. Christ, Weezers in front of us, black suits and their dogs behind us. We were as dead as all the other kids buckled down in their beds in the infirmary. Part of me wanted to stop, wanted to just wait here for the black suits. I mean, they were scary, but at least you could talk to them. Whatever the Weezers were, it was something age-old and rotten, the kind of evil you could never bargain with. And we were running right toward them. Simon reached the doorway, this too covered with a curtain of plastic strips. He didn't hesitate, just threw himself into it and disappeared with a flap. Swearing under my breath, I lowered my head and pushed through, feeling Z's breath on my neck as he followed. I should have kept my eyes forward, but you know what it's like when you're running, when you're terrified and you're convinced there's something right behind you. I stopped, peered back through the dirty plastic, saw the black suits pile in through the door opposite. 1, 3, 7, all scanning the room for the Weezer that had screamed and for whatever had attacked it. But the dogs already knew. Two sets of silver eyes blazed right through the curtain at us, and when the creatures howled, I knew it was because they had our scent in their muzzles. I realized Z and Simon were still running, and I sprinted after them. We were in another long corridor, which thankfully was empty, although I knew from the screams that echoed off the blood-red walls that the Weezers were close. I didn't realize how close until we passed the first of several rooms hewn out of the rock. Inside, sealed by a thick plexiglass door and protected by an electrical lock that looked far too modern for furnace, was a small operating theatre. And in the room, midway through a procedure, was a Weezer. It had its filthy hands and a figure laid out on a steel table, a boy whose eyes were closed but whose peeled chest rose up and down slowly. I staggered past the door, knowing that if I didn't start running, then it would be me on that table, me being dissected, then put back together like a kit model. I barely noticed the other rooms to my left and right, each with the same electrical door. Most were empty, but some had Weezers inside, their rays and eyes too engrossed in their specimens to notice us run past. "Where are we going?" I heard Z hiss, he and Simon still hurling themselves forward up ahead.
"I don't know," Simon answered. "I've never been this deep before. No one has. At least, no one who has survived."
They stopped at a junction, giving me a chance to catch up.
"Which way?" asked Z.
"Didn't you just hear me?" the kid snapped. "I don't know."
He glanced right, then straight ahead, then took off to the left.
"The screams are coming from that way,"
Z said, stretching out a hand after him, but Simon was gone, the muscles beneath his warped skin visible as he pounded down the corridor. Z turned to me.
"What do we do?" Just go!
I shouted, taking off after him. The passage kinked up ahead, and I heard Simon swear when he looked around the corner, throwing himself back against the wall.
Wheezes,
was all he said. I ducked down, knowing that the black suits and the dogs would burst in behind us at any moment, and inched my head around the corner. There must have been 30 of them, packed into the long corridor and coming this way, called by the scream of their dying comrade. I fell, scrambled up again, and ran back to the junction. Something in my fried mind told me that if the left-hand turn led to the Weezer's quarters, then the right-hand turn was probably a dead end too. I hit the crossroads and swung left, darting down a short corridor that ended in a metal door. A howl behind us, the shout of the black suits. I grabbed the handle, prayed that it wasn't locked. Then the latch lifted, the door creaked and swung open, and I wished that it had been. Before us was a charnel house. I thought at first that I was looking at more red stone walls, rougher than the others we'd passed and decorated with strips of torn clothing. Only it wasn't rocks that lined either side of the large room, stacked in piles as tall as I was. It was corpses. In hiding. The sounds behind us were getting louder, the black suits and the dogs and the wheezes closing in. I don't think I could have brought myself to enter the room if Simon hadn't shoved us forward, pushing me and Z into the meat locker before stepping in himself and closing the door quietly behind him. I realized I was shaking, my whole body trembling uncontrollably. I couldn't figure out which emotion was causing it. There was fear, yes, and disbelief. But there was anger too, surging up from my gut like molten rock, making my blood feel like it was on fire. How could they do this? How could they get away with it? I didn't want to look, but I couldn't stop myself. Most of the bodies were rats, deformed limbs and faces that looked wild and vicious even in death. Their silver eyes were open and staring blankly into the room, and I could almost forget that they had once been human, been kids like me and Z. Almost. It was less easy to pretend with the other bodies scattered around. I saw pale limbs, untouched by the Weezer's scalpels, the hint of a cheek or a tuft of mousy brown hair. Specimens was the only word that came to mind. These were the ones that had gone wrong, that had been dumped. The emotion flared for a moment, then it dulled, leaving me numb. I know why. If it hadn't, then my mind would have shattered right there, broken into pieces so small and so damaged it could never have been put back together. I caught sight of a suit and frowned. In one corner, half buried under the bodies of a couple of smaller corpses, was one of the guards. His jacket had been torn open, the shirt stained black. He must have died fighting the rats, I realized. I didn't quite know why, but there was something even worse about the way he'd been discarded here by his own people than there was about the other dead. What kind of monsters would do that? Then again, the black suits were just more specimens, and if they died, they were no more useful to the warden than the kids they'd once been.
It's the incinerator,
said Simon, the sound of his voice startling me after the stunned silence. I'd been so busy looking at the corpses that littered the floor that I hadn't noticed the hulking metal doors on the other side of the room. They were open, an enormous crematorium oven, visible behind them with walls smoked black and a thick carpet of ashes.
This is where they burn them.
No, said Z, echoing my own thoughts. They can't. It's just wrong.
Is there anything about this place that isn't?
Replied Simon softly. A muffled bark from the doorway reminded us of the freaks on our tail, and we all looked left and right for a way out. But the room only had one door and an incinerator.
We've got to hide,
I said, hearing the thump of boots on rock getting closer against a backdrop of angry screams from the Weezers. Nobody knew where we were,
but it wouldn't take them long if they opened the door and spotted us standing like statues in the middle of the room.
Where?
Asked Simon, looking at the incinerator.
I'm not getting in there. What if they turn it on?
I scanned the room. There was nowhere else, not unless... The bodies? I said, my voice so weak it barely left my mouth. Simon and Z were shaking their heads, but the noises outside were growing in volume every second. I walked toward a corner of the room, my body still shaking but my mind blank, all the emotional receptors switched off. There were five or six corpses here, all rats, slumped over each other and motionless like a tableau of some grotesque wrestling match. I reached out, grabbed an exposed arm, then immediately pulled back. The body was still warm. Not just warm, it was hot. I checked for a pulse, but there was nothing. I scanned the pile. None of the creatures were breathing, their chests all locked tight. I heard a shout from behind the door, the noise of approaching feet. Taking a deep breath and trying to ignore the smell, I grabbed the arm again and pulled the corpse away from the wall. Then I lowered a foot into the gap I'd made, nestling myself down between the other bodies. I let the topmost cadaver fall back on me, its dead weight pushing my head uncomfortably to the side. Fortunately, there were no flies this deep beneath the surface, but the stench of decay was so pungent I could almost see it rising like a heat mirage off the crumbling flesh. There was a choked cry from across the room, and I peered through the gap between an arm and a foot to see both Simon and Z clambering into their own hiding places. I wasn't sure who had made the noise, but they were both sobbing gently as they pulled scraps of clothing or stiff limbs over themselves. The latch clicked, a mournful creak filling the room as the door swung open. I heard the soft growl of a dog, followed instantly by a whine of protest.
Get in there,
said a black suit. There was more whimpering, as if the dog was reluctant to proceed. I didn't blame it. Its animal instincts must have sensed the death in this place from the other side of the infirmary, warning it to stay away. I realized it had probably followed our scent here, but I knew the corpses would shield us from the dog's noses as well as they would hide us from the black suit's eyes.
I'll do it,
said another voice, just as loud and just as deep. A dark shape strode into the room, although from the angle I was crouched in, I could only make out a pair of suited legs and polished boots. I closed my eyes, tried to stay as still as humanly possible. Any minute now, I was going to feel a powerful hand on my shoulder, wrenching me out and tossing me to the dogs or into the incinerator. But after a few seconds, the guard turned and disappeared back through the door.
Rats must have bolted back out of the compound before we arrived,
I heard him say as the door swung shut.
Can't have got far. See if the dogs can pick up the scent from outside. And get those wheezers back to their cells.
It was Z who escaped first, pushing his way free and gasping for air. I waited a moment, too scared to move in case the black suits came back. But there was no more sound from outside, not even the wail of a wheezer. I pushed upward with my legs, the corpses resisting for a moment before tumbling loose. I stepped from the coffin of rotting flesh, walking to the center of the room where the three of us stood for a minute in silence, trying not to think about what we'd just done.
We have to get you back to solitary before they realize you're gone,
Simon said eventually.
They obviously think the rats are to blame. And if they suspect the rats have started breaking into the infirmary, then security's going to double.
He swore, stamping his foot.
We don't even have any of the stuff we came for.
How will we get back? Asked Z. Won't there be wheezers and black suits everywhere?
Sounds like the suits have gone off on a rat hunt,
Simon answered, brushing his hands down his body as if trying to rub off some invisible mess. I felt itchy all over as well, like death was contagious.
There might be one or two, but we'll have to take that chance. We can't stay here.
The thought of stepping through that door, coming face to face with the Weezers again, turned my legs to water. But Simon was right. What was the alternative? Sit around until they fired up the incinerator? I realized nobody was moving and steeled myself, walking back to the door. Putting my ear to the warm metal revealed no sound from outside, and with my pulse drumming in my ears, I lifted the latch and eased it open. A Weezer was making its way down the corridor beyond, but it had its back to us. It took a couple of steps, then stopped, its body shaking wildly, its head snapping back and forth like it was having a fit. Then it reached one of the electronic doors and vanished. I willed my legs to work, and it seemed to take a mammoth effort to make that first step. But once I had started moving, momentum took over. We flew down the corridor, the plexiglass doors flashing by on both sides. I didn't look inside, knowing that if I did, I'd see a Weezer gazing out, ready to sound the alarm. But nothing happened, and we'd almost reached the door that led back into the infirmary when I heard Simon call out softly. By the time I had turned, he had disappeared into one of the operating theatres, and I would have assumed he'd been pulled in if Z wasn't standing relatively calm, half in and half out of the doorway. Cursing, I doubled back, peered inside to see that it was empty. Simon was standing over a trolley snatching up suture clamps and bone pins. He'd already slung a coil of surgical tubing over his shoulder.
"Take what you can," he said,
and Z and I responded without thinking. I grabbed hold of a hammer with a hooked end, pulled another length of thick rubber hose from a rack on the wall. There wasn't anything else on the trolley that looked remotely useful for climbing, so I headed back to the door and out into the passageway. In the room opposite, a Weezer was standing over a metal table, scalpel held in one unsteady hand. I moved on before it noticed me. Seconds later, we were peering through the plastic slats at the back of the infirmary, wondering whether it was good luck that the room ahead was deserted or whether it was a trap. For all we knew, there could have been black suits behind every set of curtains, shotguns locked and loaded, waiting to gun us down. But we'd made it this far. We ran, legs lined with lead, lungs wrinkled up into prunes. We ran, straight down the middle of the room, straight out through the filthy curtain, straight down the corridor beyond. We ran, and by the time we'd hit the junction leading back to the cells and still hadn't been detected, we were giggling insanely, sheer relief rushing like pure, clear water through our veins. The hatch locks were still in place. Nobody had checked to see if we were there. Z went in first, then I handed Simon the kit I'd stolen and leaped into the black hole of my cell, too exhausted from what had just happened to even care that I was being buried alive again. It was only when Simon moved to close my hatch that the laughter faded. "You're coming back, aren't you?" I said. But Simon didn't answer. Instead, he let the door close and pushed the lock back into its casing, leaving me alone in the dark with the gut-wrenching fear that we'd never see him again. Doubts. It was as if this time the darkness had weight, substance. It pressed down on me, making my arms and legs and neck feel like they were cased in concrete. I let myself drop, then sat there in the corner of the tiny cell, waiting for feeling to return to my limbs. Part of me couldn't believe what had just happened. It was easier to think that the whole thing had been in my head, that I'd been stuck here in my cell all this time fighting imaginary enemies. Except I could still feel the Weezer's grip around my throat, fingertips on my windpipe. I knew that if there were light and mirror in here, I'd be able to see the bruising on my neck, like someone who'd been hanged on the gallows. My entire body still throbbed, but the pain was a welcome diversion from my thoughts. I shifted on the uncomfortable stone, licked some of the moisture from the wall to quench my thirst. I wondered again whether Simon would return, or whether he'd already be making his way up the steeple. He hadn't needed us at all, not really. It was he who had found the rock, who had made the assumption that freedom lay at the top, and he'd probably already thought of using the medical equipment to help him climb it. All he'd wanted from me was reassurance that his plan would work, even if I didn't think it would. He'd gotten that, and there was no other reason for him to come back for us. The lightless air seemed to thicken, filling up the cell and closing over my mouth. I choked, tried and failed to draw breath. My lungs burned. A high-pitched whistle began to ring in my ears, but it was just panic. I knew enough to recognize it and inhaled twice through my nose, breathing out slowly and feeling the oxygen hit my veins like a drug. Knowing Simon was up there, that he'd be coming back for us, had given us the illusion that we were free. It lessened the power of solitary purely because we weren't trapped, we weren't isolated, we weren't alone. With him gone, however, the cell became a tomb. And that wasn't the only reason I felt the panic gnawing at my stomach again. Deep down, I knew Simon's plan wouldn't work. It couldn't work. Yes, I'd had the flash of inspiration about the climbing gear, but it had never been serious. I'd been clutching at straws and only saw it as a real possibility because, well, I was desperate, delusional. Simon too had only gone along with it because he had nothing else. And when reality denies you the tools you need for survival, you grab them from wherever you can. And if we couldn't get out, then what? We'd probably live, but we wouldn't be alive, not in the way we were now. We'd become rats who devoured the living, or black suits who terrorized them. We'd be demons, the living dead, and the thought was unbearable. I wished I'd kept that scalpel. I stared into the darkness, hoping that my brain would conjure up some company, someone, anyone to help me pull free of this cloud of depression. I saw the strands of silk suspended in the distance, as if there were no walls between them and me, and sure enough, they began to coil into a body. But the image wouldn't solidify, shimmering above the invisible ground like a heat haze. "Donovan?" I asked the ghost, hoping to see a familiar face. But something in my head wouldn't let him form. Either I'd forgotten what he really looked like beneath his monstrous new flesh, or I knew he was dead. I called his name again, and the figure replied with white noise, the voice lost in static. "I'm sorry," I said, reaching out for him. "I'm sorry I couldn't save you." The image didn't change, as blurred as the reflection in a disturbed puddle, but suddenly the voice became clearer, like a radio being tuned.
"It's not too late," he replied. "You don't have to free me to save me."
I frowned, but the phantom was dissolving like salt in water. I tried to bring him back, tried to picture his face, but I couldn't recall it. All I could see was what he had become, the monstrous visage, the cold eyes, the face-splitting grin. And right then I knew that I'd never be able to remember him the way he was. I'm not sure how long I cried, just minutes probably, but it could have been hours. At first, heaving sobs racked my exhausted body, but after a while they softened to pathetic whimpers, mules better suited to a kitten. I wrapped my arms around myself, pretended that they were my mum's or my dad's or Donovan's or Z's or anyone's, but they carried no warmth, no comfort, not here, alone at the bottom of the world. I straightened up, feeling my spine crack, then picked up the grill. I smashed it against the toilet pipe, the clang of metal on metal shaking the sadness from me, helping my mind pull itself back together. "What now?" I asked. There was a pause, then Z's muted reply. "Wait for Simon." "And if he doesn't come back?" Another pause. "He has to." Even through solid rock with staccato words, I could hear the unvoiced question at the end of Z's statement. I started hammering out why, but then changed my mind, realizing that it was pointless. Instead, I smacked out a question. "Any other ideas?" Nope, came his reassuring reply. You? The last of Z's echoes almost concealed the footsteps above me, and I held my breath, wondering if I had been wrong about Simon. Maybe he was back after all, about to pull open our hatches and take us back to the steeple. At least that way we could die trying to do something, trying to save ourselves. I heard the creak of a hatch opening, but it wasn't mine. There were more scuffled footsteps overhead, but none of the scratching and snuffling of a rat. I waited to hear the hatch slam back down, but nothing happened. See? I hammered out. There was no reply. I tried again, cursing him for having a name that began with a Z. Still nothing. I felt my heart sink into my stomach, stewed in acid. Come on, I said, smashing the grill against the pipe randomly in the hope that I'd get a response. I thought I heard something from outside, a cry of pain, but the ringing in my ears was too loud to be sure. See, I yelled, knowing he wouldn't be able to hear me. Had they taken him? Jesus, had they taken him to the infirmary? Something whacked against the pipe in Z's cell, hard enough to sound like a bomb going off in my head. It struck again, even louder than before. What the hell was he doing in there? Trying to tunnel his way into the sewer? I put the question to him in a series of frantic strikes with my own grill. No reply. Then the deafening clangs came again. 23, 8, 1, 20. What? My heart lifted, still adrenaline-fueled but not on the verge of giving out as it had been a moment ago. It was such a relief to hear him that I just sat for a moment smiling at the wall. Then I started hammering out another message. Thought I heard something. It took forever. Nothing, he replied, the sound of his strikes loud enough to make my brain vibrate. I wondered if maybe he'd knocked his toilet pipe loose or something, if that could explain the increase in volume. After waiting an age for him to say something else, I picked up my grill again and spoke. Sure nothing's wrong? Nothing. See? I struck. You're acting weird. No response. See? I rubbed my palm, prepared for more blisters. See? If we ever did get out of here, I was making him change his name. The blows from his cell began again, and I listened carefully. Alex, the message started, the strike still too loud, too powerful.
What makes you think I'm Z?
Choices. Even before the last chime faded, I knew what had happened. Despite the heat in my cell, the sweat that poured down my face from smashing the pipe, I felt my blood run cold, goose flesh erupting on my skin. C was gone. The black suits had taken him. It had been them trampling above my cell, Z's hatch opening. It was probably one of the guards in there right now. I could picture them grinning as they led me on, their dull laughter fading into the passageway as they carted Z off to his fate. I tried to think. Had they heard anything that could give us away? Anything to indicate that we were planning to escape? No. We'd been talking about Simon, but that was before the footsteps above me. I doubt they'd heard our plans, and even if they had, they probably wouldn't have decoded it. Still, it wouldn't be long before Z was forced to talk. It was difficult to keep secrets when the freaks of Furnace were asking the questions. Maybe it would be better if they knew. Maybe I should even tell them, try to make a deal with the black suits. Would they let us live if we told them about Simon and the other lost boys? They wouldn't release us, but they might send us back up top, to the relative luxury of Gen Pop with its daily slop and comfortable beds and cool showers. They might let us go home. Home. I was stunned by the fact I'd thought it. But there was nothing outside anymore, nothing for me. Furnace was my home now, and I wanted to be back there.
Hey! I shouted, pounding on the hatch. Don't hurt him! I've got information you want!
It seemed like the first time in years that I'd raised my voice and my throat was instantly raw. It didn't stop me. I smashed my fist against the metal even harder, knowing that the sound would barely even reach the floor above. Nobody came. I punched the hatch one last time and screamed with frustration. Why had they taken him and not me? It didn't make any sense. Not that anything did here. I knew well enough that there was no system to the atrocities in Furnace, no logic. The Warden and his monsters did what they wanted whenever they wanted, anarchy disguised as regimented control. I felt like crying again, but forced the emotion away. C was in trouble, and me blubbing my eyes out in my cell wasn't going to do him any good at all. I needed Simon. I needed him to come back, to let me out. Come on, I said, trying to project the thought through the stone, down the tunnels and up the slope to where the Lost Boys were hiding. Come on, don't leave me here. I kept saying it, kept thinking it, kept picturing it, being transmitted right into Simon's head. There's no such thing as psychic power. If you ask me, it's all a load of horse crap. Which is why, when I heard the lever of my hatch grind open, I couldn't quite believe it. Crimson light flooded in like blood and I peered through the mottled glow to see a familiar face above me, teeth like broken piano keys in a goofy grin.
You look surprised,
the kid said softly, offering me his giant hand.
Think I was going to leave without you?
Never, I replied, feeling the muscles in his arm tense as he hoisted me out. Z's hatch was still open, and a quick glance inside told me what I already knew. Simon saw the look in my eye and shook his head.
I couldn't get back in time, he whispered. I was on my way. The suits nearly caught me. They were coming here, coming for him.
But the Warden wanted us in here for a month, I said, eyeing the passageway warily. They shouldn't have taken him. Simon shrugged, walking down the corridor toward the junction that led to the infirmary. He hadn't bothered to close my hatch this time, and I didn't either. I wasn't coming back, no matter what.
Never enough specimens,
he muttered sadly.
Weezers are always after fresh blood. Can't believe they let you live this long.
But the Warden?
Doesn't always get his own way, Simon replied. Now we've got to move.
We're going after Z, right? I asked, trotting to catch up and knowing what his answer would be. He spun around, silver eyes burning into my own.
You've got a choice to make, Alex,
he said, the voice too old for his face.
And you've got to make it right now. You either go after your friend and you die, inside anyway, or you cut loose and come with me. We've got a shot at this, a real good one, I think. Once you're outside, you can come back with the police, the army, everyone. But if you try to help Z now, or Donovan, or any of them, then you're as good as dead.
He looked over his shoulder, ear cocked.
We need to go right now. So make your choice.
I felt like I'd gone back in time, promising feverishly to Donovan that I'd come back, bring the authorities before the Warden could do anything to him. I'd failed, and if I went with Simon, who's to say I wouldn't fail again, leaving Z to rot? But what would happen if I went after him? I pictured myself walking into the infirmary, trying to find Z. Trying to fight off the Weezers as the black suits laughed at me. Feeling them lift me up, the darkness flooding my veins even as they strapped me to the mattress. And I made my decision. Not because I knew I could escape and return with the cavalry, not because I thought it was the best, the only way to help Z, but because I could still smell the stench of the Weezer on me and I couldn't go back. Some hero. Let's go,
I said, the words barely making it out of my mouth. I was so ashamed of them. Let's get out of here. We'll come back with help. Simon nodded, then sped down the corridor. We reached the junction, the path leading off to the main prison dead ahead, the infirmary off to our left. We'd have to pass it to get out, and for a moment my brain pictured Z inside, staring at the plastic curtain as we ran past, calling out silently to our backs. It was almost too much.
Clear, said Simon, running again.
I didn't look as we sped past the door, closing my ears to the sounds of screaming I could hear from inside, so high-pitched that I couldn't tell if it came from the Weezers or their victims. I didn't think about anything other than putting one foot in front of the other, and somehow I managed to stay upright, to keep Simon in my line of sight. The sound of the black suit seemed to be everywhere, deep voices that chuckled from inside the rooms we passed. But by some miracle, they didn't see us, didn't hear us. I just kept running, because surely if I didn't look back, I didn't have to think about what I'd done. It was the sound of a phone that stopped me. The shrill, old-fashioned ring was so out of place here that I almost tripped over my own feet and had to brace a hand on the wall to stop from falling. We'd reached the junction that led up to the vault door. To our left was the final stretch of tunnel before the cavern. To our right lay the access to the warden's quarters. The phone was ringing from that direction, the same place where I had sensed something wrong before, where I thought I had seen, what? A cloud of something, something bad. Simon had bounded ahead, skidding to a halt only when he noticed I wasn't with him.
Come on, he hissed.
But I couldn't move. The phone was like an invisible hook that kept me in place, that tugged on my mind, threatening to reel me in. Every time it rang, the corridor seemed to grow darker, the walls pulsing and stretching like a living thing, some vast intestinal tract. A pain was growing right in the center of my forehead, but inside my skull, not outside. With each shrill cry, the sensation spread, as though beneath my skin I was crumbling into dust. There was a door in the rock halfway down the corridor, the phone's ring emanating from there. It seemed like it had been going on forever, a siren that had become an entity inside my own head. Simon was behind me. I could feel his hand on my arm, but I couldn't hear him. The only thing that existed was the phone. Then it stopped, and the pain exploded. I made out a voice, and I knew it straight away. The warden. It was faint, but at the same time, it was like he was screaming in my ear.
Yes, sir,
he said, two syllables like dynamite.
I understand, sir. It will be done.
I couldn't hear who was on the other end, obviously, but I could feel it. After everything I'd witnessed in Furnace, the horrors I had endured, this was so much worse. Because whatever it was didn't scare me. It called to me. And even though I knew it was rotten, evil, I found myself moving toward it, my limbs jerking like a puppet's. Something coiled around my brain, soft and rancid. Then I felt the corridor flip upside down. Felt Simon's misshapen body beneath me, felt the wind rush past my ears as he fled. Each clumsy step carried me farther from the voice, from its dark call, until all that was left was a gentle whisper that echoed like the last breath of a dying man. We flew through the vault door, the cavern ahead deserted. Simon didn't put me down until we reached the cracked rock where the ceiling dropped to the floor, and then only because we couldn't squeeze through together. He let me go first, hand on my head to make sure I didn't bang it. Then he was in after me. He waited, panting, the harsh light of the halogens following us through and giving his scarred, patchwork skin a weird translucent sheen. I stared at him, wanting to thank him but unable to quite recall how to talk.
Just give it a minute, he said. The first time you hear it, you feel like you're going to die. It takes a while for the sickness to go.
He was right. Something was sitting in my gut like a spiked ball, as if all the pain that had been in my head moments ago had sunk there, waiting to be digested. I rubbed my stomach, trying to settle it, and only when the nausea had ebbed away did I dare speak.
What was it? The warden?
Simon emitted a laugh, but there was no humor in it.
Him? No. He looks the part, but he's nothing. He's just another employee.
He stopped as the sound of rocks hitting the ground seeped through the crack. It could have been anything, but we were still a little too close to the compound for comfort. I could just about see him scuttling up the rough slope ahead of us like a spider.
Don't worry about it, okay? Let's get up to the steeple.
I followed, far less graceful than him, but able to manage the handholds easily enough despite the dark. We emerged in the tunnel at the top, taking a few jagged turns to get back to the cave. It was empty.
They're waiting for us there,
Simon explained, leading the way through. I questioned him about the voice again, but he didn't respond, and it was only when we squeezed through the last crevice and found ourselves back in the immense gorge that he answered me.
Maybe it's best you don't know, okay? At least until we're out in the open. We need to focus on this, or we're all going to end up dead. And we've sacrificed too much to mess it up now. Forget about it, Alex. Forget about everything you've ever seen down here. Just think about getting out.
He turned away, called out softly into the darkness. Almost immediately, a torch blinked into life. It did nothing to illuminate the cavern, but it did pick out two dirty faces huddling by the wall.
You made it, said Ozzy. What about the other one?
Suits got him, Simon replied bluntly. We got Alex, though.
Both Ozzy and Pete nodded at me, but I didn't acknowledge them. I couldn't stop thinking about what I'd felt outside the warden's quarters. The phone, the voice, the hooks in my mind. Even when I noticed the equipment piled up beneath Pete's crooked body, the clamps that had been twisted into hooks, the thick tube pierced by pins, I couldn't clear my head. All I could focus on was the warden and the person he had been talking to, and the fact that I'd left Z in there alone.
He okay?
I heard Ozzy ask, a small voice right on the edge of my consciousness. I felt their eyes on me, but I didn't look up, not even when I heard Simon's whispered response.
I don't know. He just heard the warden on the phone. He just heard him speaking to Alfred Furness.
The only way is up. Simon was right. I couldn't afford to be distracted. I'd made my choice. I was here. So the only thing to do was make the best of it. If somehow the vast steeple of rock that towered over our heads led to the surface, or at least to a higher set of tunnels that connected to the outside world, then I could get help. I could come back for Z and for Donovan. It wouldn't be too late. And however crazy the idea sounded, however much I doubted it could work, it felt good knowing I'd never have to return to the hole or to the infirmary. Not without a goddamned army behind me. No, it was either climb to heaven or plunge to our deaths. There was no other way this was going to play out. I soon discovered I wasn't the only one who had to leave a friend behind. Pete's spindly legs and arms could never hope to drag his overstuffed torso up the wall. He could barely even walk. The kid cheered us on, talked us up as we got our kit ready, but his voice was cracked and filled with desperation.
I'm coming back,
Simon must have told him a dozen times in the space of a few minutes.
I promise you, you have my word. I won't leave you here.
It was like a mirror image of my life, and for the first time I wondered how many other people had tried to break out of Furnace, saying the same words to their cellmates and friends and brothers. I'll bet it was far more than I realised, far more than the warden in the black suits ever revealed. It was a strange recognition, and even though I knew that nobody had ever made it out, that nobody had ever kept their promise and returned, it filled me with hope. Maybe we could do this. The plan was that Simon and I would make our way up the steeple, Ozzy keeping watch below with Pete. The younger kid had wanted to go, but he was more scared of heights than he was of the nightmares in the prison and knew he'd never make it. Besides, he didn't have the heart to leave Pete on his own. We had 2 20-meter coils of surgical tubing. It was thick stuff, but even so, Simon had doubled it up and twisted it into a spiral. The bulk of it would hang between us, and we both had a shorter length to hammer into the rock at regular intervals. Whoever was ahead would fix one strand of makeshift rope every 15 meters or so, ensuring that if either of us fell, we wouldn't go far. Not unless the tube snapped, or the pin slipped out of the wall, or the rock came loose, or our knots failed.
Ready? Simon asked, scaring the doubts from my mind.
I looked at him, at his lopsided smile, and wondered why I had ever questioned his motives. He had come back for me, risking his life even though he could have scaled the wall alone.
Nope,
I said, my voice trembling. I took a deep drink of water from the IV bag they had brought with them, relishing the strength it lent to my muscles.
Me neither,
he replied, his silver eyes flashing.
So let's do it.
He handed me a pair of clamps, and I toyed with them. They were like scissors, only with a wide, blunt end instead of blades. They were sprung so that when you squeezed the handles, the two prongs expanded, designed to keep wounds and rib cages open during surgery, but equally useful for wedging into small cracks in the rock. Next came a handful of long, tough bone pins and one of the hammers with a hooked end which I looped onto my overalls. Simon took a minute to say goodbye, hugging the other two kids, the three of them sobbing. I stood by awkwardly, then waved a farewell once they had parted.
We'll see you again, said Ozzy, real soon.
Not too soon, though, joked Simon.
They laughed, wishing us a final good luck. Simon tied the flashlight to his overalls with a small section of tube, and for a moment we stood side by side, heads craned back as we stared at the steeple, the rough red rock disappearing into an endless night above us.
Here goes nothing, I said.
Here goes everything,
he answered, and we started to climb. It was harder than I'd imagined, much harder. The fissures in the pinnacle were jagged and uneven, and before I'd climbed a couple of meters, blood was threatening my grip. My muscles weakened from lack of food and stripped bare by adrenaline, struggled to lift me, and each time I straightened a leg or tensed my arms, I thought they were going to fold. The only thing that gave me any comfort was the fact that the rock face angled inward rather than hanging out over the gulf of darkness below. This meant that when I felt myself losing strength, I could rest my body against the slope without fear of tumbling off. Simon had already taken the lead, his massive arm pulling him up while his smaller limb wedged him tightly in place. Each time he moved, the flashlight swung, making the